Desiree Helgers.
On Saturday, June 18th, 21 activists, myself included, were arrested during an oil train protest and rail blockade in Vancouver, Washington. The protest and blockade came on the heels of the June 7th Mosher oil train derailment. Sunday, June 19th, I sat down with two of the elder activists of the Vancouver 21, Imogene Williams, 85, and Lowen Berman, age 74.
It's a life or death issue. We all have people we love, and we want them to have a nice planet. Like we want them to have the same things that we enjoyed and that are beautiful in our lives. You know, we can see the deterioration happening rather fast. So it makes it very urgent. There have been explosions already. Pipelines leak, and there are all these reasons to keep it in the ground. And we want to remember the people that died in Lac Megantic. 47, I guess it is. I was telling about that demonstration which marked the one-year anniversary. And Backbone, this wonderful group on Vashon Island that provides us with special effects and signs, and for that one-year demonstration, they gave us portraits of the 47 people in Lac Megantic, and I had a portrait. I was in the demonstration. I had a portrait of a French-Canadian grandma who was killed, and so we carried those portraits in the demonstration at Safeco Field, because there's thousands of people at a Mariners game, and the tracks are right there. So those trains are very dangerous.
I think that climate change is the existential challenge or crisis of our day, that for the first time in history, at least human history, the sky really is falling. And what is so shocking and upsetting is the fact that we're not responding. When I think about what would be needed to adequately, I think it's too late to stop the crisis. The crisis is happening. But to begin to respond to it appropriately would be something similar to the way we responded to Pearl Harbor, where folks in Portland know that within 6 months, we were turning out ships from the shipyards here at an astonishing rate. And we've seen these old movie tone newsreels of the ships and the planes and the tanks and the jeeps totally changing the whole industrial economy in a matter of months, from producing private automobiles to producing military hardware. So we know it can be done. And that's what we need now, except instead of ships and tanks and planes, we need offshore wind turbines and geothermal apparatus and solar generating units. And yet we're not doing any of that. And every day that we keep from doing that, the catastrophe gets worse. And when I say catastrophe, I mean that not lightly. I just saw a couple of weeks ago on the BBC that NOAA, the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, is now predicting a 10-foot sea level rise by 2060. 2060, which is what, 36 years from now. Can you imagine what a 10-foot sea level rise would mean in Bangladesh, where hundreds of millions of people would lose their lives, their livelihood, their land? Even cities like New York and Boston would make the Sandy incident seem like child's play. If anybody has oceanfront property here in Oregon, they could forget about it. That's just one example. The examples of the destruction of agriculture, the loss of food supplies, the movement of tropical diseases north, as we're already seeing with the Zika virus, one thing after another. We're talking about a calamity that is going to take hundreds of millions, perhaps billions of lives. And yet we go out and it's business as usual. The Paris Accords that the government was making a big deal out of achieving would set a target of 3.5-degree increase. And we know that a 1.5-degree increase is, which we've already reached, is all that we could possibly sustain. So it's an insanity to not have action taken. And in the light of no one taking action at a official level or a government level or an industrial level, we're left only with the people. And so the people like you and I and the rest have to do whatever we can in whatever way we can to organize ourselves and take whatever action we can to bring about a change that would be an appropriate response. Now, at the same time, I understand that climate change should not and could not be seen in isolation from our entire culture and economic system. So when I hear about market-based solutions, it's the market that got us where we are. And if it's not climate change that's going to get us, you know, it's going to be resource depletion and the lack of any fresh water. The fact that already in the world today, billions of people face starvation and disease and misery, and it's a function of the regular, normal operation of a system, an economic system, which we can call global corporate capitalism, and a cultural system that flows from it that puts private profit ahead of the common good, makes all decisions short-term rather than looking at the long-term impacts. So the solutions that we face are not as simple as those that we faced at World War II, where we switch production from one thing to another, but really a reconstruction of our entire economic and cultural system. And that's the only hope we have. And there's lots of thought out there. I don't have some great plan for what it would look like, but there are millions of people around the world who have ideas and thoughts, who understand the problem, and we should be trying a thousand different kinds of economic and cultural programs and experiments to see how we could live in a sustainable way in a world which is facing imminent catastrophe. And yet it's exactly this economic and cultural system that we have that keeps us from even trying or experimenting with alternatives. And it seems very daunting. And yet I've spent my life working around issues of social justice, and I really have no other way to approach the world. And so this is what I'm called to do.
We are having some successes. People turn out, and we stopped shipping coal into Grays Harbor. We stopped that because we turned out and we went down there. You know, the most wonderful thing recently is the Army Corps of Engineers deciding not to give a permit for the construction of a shipping terminal at Cherry Point near Bellingham. And we have the Lummi people to thank for that, because the Army Corps of Engineers said the Lummi people are correct. That will destroy their livelihood of fishing and crab, and it cannot be mitigated. That was their statement. That's an important victory. Coming up, we have the Tesoro Savage project on the Columbia River. And the final decision on that lies with Governor Jay Inslee. You know, they want to build these terminals all up and down the West Coast and in the river. We just have to stop it. And we have to stop the trains.
I think it's important to note that the place where we sat on the tracks is blocks away from the planned Tesoro Savage terminal, and that terminal means oil trains filled with explosive Bakken crude running right through downtown Vancouver. And if one of those were to derail and explode there, it could be a huge catastrophe. On the other hand, it's important to understand that the entire fossil fuel industry is a daily catastrophe, starting with the extraction of the fossil fuels, most likely these days from either fracking, which is polluting aquifers, causing earthquakes, polluting huge areas of the country, or through the tar sands extraction, which has turned huge areas of indigenous land in Alberta, Canada, into vast wastelands and polluted a huge river. The size of the area that they are planning to destroy with the tar sands is equal to the size of England. And they're allowed to continue doing this. And so for us to take some action at the point of transportation is also to stop the exploitation and destruction through the extraction process. So we've already talked about what would happen in terms of exploding oil trains, Lac-Mégantic, Mosher, potentially the entire Columbia Corridor, in terms of transportation. But then assuming that somehow these fuels could be transported without a catastrophe, they'll eventually be burned. And that's as big a catastrophe as if they happened in downtown Vancouver, because there's only one world, there's only one atmosphere. It doesn't matter where they get burned. The burning will create more carbon, more climate change, and often we're moving towards a tipping point where it won't matter anymore what we do, because the changes will be irreversible. So we have to stop this whole process from extraction to transportation to refining to burning. It's all one continuum, which is incredibly destructive. And the very fact that it continues is what keeps us from doing something else. You know, every dollar spent on a gallon of gasoline or of bunker oil or whatever it ends up being is a dollar that is not being spent on developing and implementing renewables. We know we can do it. We have the technology now to do it. And with the kind of research that we have seen solve problems over and over again, we know that it unquestionably could be solved with the appropriate influx of resources. But it won't happen because, again, of an economic and cultural system that puts power to make these decisions in the hands of corporations whose only interest is in this month's profit. They can't even look at next year's profit. It's this quarter's views. And it's not because the people working in the corporations are evil people, and if we could just replace them with nice people, then everything would be okay. The problem is the system itself. And unless we change that system, we will continue to make primary social economic decisions on a basis which is absolutely inimical to the continued existence of life on Earth.
You've been listening to a pre-recorded interview with Loan Berman and Imogene Williams, who are among 21 activists arrested in Vancouver, Washington, during an oil train protest and rail blockade on June 18th. This has been Desiree Hellegers with the Oldmoor Variety Hour.
Uno, due, tre, quattro.